Nick.
Hello, Scott.
How's it going?
It's going really good. I'm really excited about my microphone working.
You said right before we started recording, you said you had good news.
Yeah, like literally, I was walking to the computer where I record this, and I got a phone call from one of my very best friends, Claire, and she was like, she was like, hey, and I was like, hey, how's it going? And she was like, what are you doing? And I didn't even think there was something she could be hinting at, you know?
Yeah.
And we went on, like, because I was like, oh, how's it going? And we were trying to, like, top each other with how much we could do the voice, because I thought that's what we were doing. I was like, oh, we're playing this phone game. Okay. And earlier today, the cast list went up for a show that I'm directing called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That was a weird way to say that, because it's like, it's a show called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It's this little show. Probably never heard of it.
This little phenomenon. And so I'm directing, like, a reading of the radio show scripts.
Right.
Anyway, so, like, that went up finally, because I cast it, like, Monday, but it's been, like, you know, dumb theater department politics, and then I got my cast, and then it went up today. So she was like, did you see the call board? And I was like, yeah, I'm excited. And then I thought, it was like, oh, is she going to, like, do, like, good-natured ribbing because I didn't cast her in it, you know? And I was like, is that what we're doing? And then she was like, so they're all up. And I was like, oh. So there's this play called Water by the Spoonful that I read when I was a sophomore in college, so like 2 years ago. And I kind of fell hard for it in a way that I don't really fall hard for plays. Like, I love theater, and I have a great respect for, like, acting for the stage. But I've yet to that was her. I've yet to fall for a play the way that I've fallen for, like a film or a book, you know. But this story really did. It's about this kid who just got back from Afghanistan and is living in Philadelphia, and, like, the woman that raised him is dying, and his birth mom is, like, a recovering drug addict, and she has, and it's just like, and it's, but it's, he's a good kid, and, you know, it's kind of like in that vein of, it kind of hits you in the same way that Good Will Hunting can hit you if you watch it at the right time. Or, like, Catcher in the Rye can hit you at the right time. But it was very personal for me because you know, a lot of the characters are Hispanic.
Like
it's kind of, you know, like he is his cousin, and there's other races in the show, but it's very much about, like, growing up and being a young man, you know, being raised by, like, you know, really powerful, like, memorable, like, Latin American women, and, like, you know, your place in the world, and, like, what society thinks. And it really hit me, like, on a personal way. And so we're doing, like, a main stage production of it this year, and it's actually, I actually have themes from today that I want to talk about with you on the show. In terms of just being creative. And so I auditioned for this show, and it was just auditioning for it was really a cool experience because I finally got to say these words out loud.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a chance that it might be, like, the last time, you know, because you don't know if you're going to get it, you know?
Right.
So even that was like, I'm really going to try. And then I did. And so for the next couple of days, for these past few days, I've been really, like, kind of, like, stressed about it and, like, paranoid. Like, the professor walked past me and she was like, hey, good job. And my friend's like, well, that was nice of her to say. And I was like, why would she say that unless she was going to do it? She just said that to comfort me. She was like, hey, good job, even though you didn't. You know, I was literally that guy. and I really pride myself for not being that actor, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of going at it like, yeah, if it happens, it happens. And so, yeah, like, and I got the, and I'm playing the dude, and it's sort of.
Oh, wow. It's really, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I really buried the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she was like, congratulations. And I was like, oh, my God. Because, I don't know, man. It these past couple of days, I've been really, because it's just part of being an actor, is not, kind of like, not knowing if you're, you know, you everyone wants to be good at this. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants to be everybody wants to be a great writer. Everybody wants to be a great director, a great actor. Like, even without any ego or narcissism involved, everybody wants to, like, be thought of in the same league as, like, Richard Linklater if you're a director. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or, like, it would be nice to think that you could, like, that you want to think that you're good at it, you know?
Yeah.
And so one of the interesting parts about acting is that you're kind of, you need someone else to give you the thing a lot of the times. Not all the time, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you think that you can do this? Well, you can't. Or you think that you can do this? Like, you can. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had this thought yesterday, because, like, when I was kind of, you know, because I would go up and down and stress.
Right.
It was like, oh, man, well, if I don't get it, like, you know, is it because I'm not good enough? And it sucks because, like, I've been working so hard. And, blah, blah, blah. And I opened up my laptop and I started writing. And it was, and writing became, like, really, writing is really cool because no one has to tell you to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of, I was like, well, even if it doesn't work out acting, it's cool to know that it doesn't matter. Because, like, there's, acting is such a weirdly, it's really interesting. It's really easy for it to become kind of unhealthy.
Right.
Because you're, even as students, like, from acting student, I'm in a class right now where we're learning about, like, type and monologues and stuff. And you have to very objectively look at, like, your body and, like, your looks and be like, well, you know, you would play this, or you're not this kind of person, you know? And right. That kind of stuff can be really unhealthy for anyone.
Right.
And the fact that that's part of our job, if you're an actor, is, like, kind of, you know, you kind of start to see why, like, so many actors are kind of mentally unhealthy.
Right. And so, well, and it's even beyond that, because even that can, there's parts of your physicality that can be in your control, you know?
Yeah.
You can get fit, you can do this, you can do that. But ultimately what it comes down to is like you were saying, is like you're 100% dependent, no matter how hard you work, no matter how well you do, no matter how perfect you think you look for that role, it all comes down to the opinion of whoever's making that decision.
Sure, yeah. And, like, are you dealing with someone who can think outside the box and maybe see you in a way that other people wouldn't? Or are you dealing with not that? And they
just,
like...
Well, and not only that, but, like, you could just not be right for the role.
No, totally, yeah.
You know? Like, it could just be that... It could be a thing where you read the role on paper and you're like, I could totally play this. But whoever is directing or casting it could have a completely different vision.
Yeah, like if Nick Kroll... auditioned for, like, Star-Lord, you know?
Right.
Like, Nick Kroll, like a hugely, like, one of the funniest dudes around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just, like, there has to be something about you inherently that fits this thing we're looking for.
Right. It all has to come together into this,
yeah,
this giant thing. And, I mean, it could even be a thing where it's like, yeah, you are the perfect, you might be the best person to choose for that role, but unfortunately... you don't look good with the other cast members, or you don't have the chemistry that is needed with the other cast members that are already cast. And so then you don't get cast because of that, regardless of the fact that you're the best person for that particular role. It's just,
yeah,
there's so many factors when it comes to getting a job as an actor. It's really fucked up, actually.
Yeah. I once read, I wish I could remember because it was just recently, but there was this famous actress that was almost in Top Gun or Risky Business. It was like an early Tom Cruise vehicle, and she didn't get it because they didn't like how much taller she was than Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, just stuff like that. Like, and you know, you and I have both casted stuff,
right?
So we totally know,
and we've both been cast in things too.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I know what it's like from both sides. I mean, granted, my example, I was like the lead in that play Born Yesterday, and which was fun, but you know, ultimately it wasn't that difficult. Like, I just showed up on a whim and got the role because I'm a I don't even want to say that I'm a slightly larger fish. Like, I'm a small fish in a tiny pool. Like, that's
sure.
Like, it was, I mean, you know, it was just, there was no competition whatsoever.
Okay. I remember being this. We were in contact. Still, we were friends still when this happened. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't remember when. It was like, what, 2011?
Yeah, something like that. 2010, 2011, something like that. Okay. No, cool. It would have been. It had to have been 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like calculating who I was dating. And then I was like, oh, that had to be 2010 because I've been with Bethany since 2011. So,
no kidding, that long?
Yeah.
No, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Like, we don't even notice at this point because it's just like, it's just a foregone conclusion that we're not going to ever be with anyone else. So,
hey, wow.
Yeah, we're just at that point in our relationship where it's just like, yeah, of course, all the other stuff, it'll all happen eventually. Like, it's just a matter of time.
No, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice, man.
I remember my mom and dad. I was talking to my mom. My mom and dad have been married for 40 years because my brother's 40. that's how I remember. And I was talking to my dad once. Like, this is a few years ago at this point. And I was like, Dad, you know, you and mom have married for so long. And I don't really remember a time when they're ever, like, truly fighting. I mean, every couple, like, you know, you forgot to put the thing on. But, you know, like, I've never known a time when they were, like, ever at odds. They're always
like
just a really
shouting
cool
match kind of deal.
Yeah, like, there's never any, like, power play. You don't respect me. It was just, there was a really good partnership between them. And I remember asking my mom and dad, like, hey, like, what's the, like, what's, like, the day-to-day of making that work, you know? Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, you know, it's like your mom and I were, like, it's like when you get married, you tie a rope around like both of your waists, right? And there's like a tether between you two. And you know, you have to walk together. You can't, one of you can't go too far behind, one of you can't, you know, you can't carry the other one. You gotta be both walking kind of equally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the rope gets too tight, and sometimes you're fussing with the knot, and sometimes you're like, it's too loose and you're like, why don't I just like walk out of it? You know, so it's not even around me anymore. Your mom and I had that thing between us for like the first like decade or so. And one day I looked down and your mom looked down and like the tether was like haggard and like worn out and not even keeping us together anymore. Like it was just gone. There was no rope. And we just like kept on walking.
Hmm.
And I was like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what you kind of want, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it doesn't even feel like a commitment. It just feels like
this
nature.
It's just natural now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a natural state at this point. But yeah, so that's definitely 2010 is when that play was happening.
Like, that was that year.
Yeah.
God, you know you're getting older when you have those years.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you were a kid, time is just a torrent of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, when you're around, like, maybe even as early as like as 18, you know,
mm-hmm.
you could very well have like just a shit year.
Like, yeah.
That was the year I was depressed for most of the year.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely that year, that 2010. Mm-hmm. outside of the play, like that was the only, that's the reason I did it was because I just wanted something different to do.
Positive. Yeah.
Yeah. Something positive and something different. And so I just kind of went for it and got it. But I didn't have like a lot of stakes in it, you know? So,
hey, that's a secret though.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's something they teach us, you know?
Yeah.
It's to learn how to not care. Cause if you go in, like you need it, maybe in your experience auditioning actors, you maybe saw someone who maybe wanted it a little bit too bad and it kind of turned you off in a way.
No, I mostly just saw bad ones and good ones.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't cast anyone face to face who didn't come from like, you know, a small area in the Midwest, you know?
Sure.
So the people who, audition and, the people who audition, half of them think they're actors, but they're not. But they just think, oh, yeah, I can do this. And it's like, no, you can barely say hello with any level of charisma, let alone, you know, speaking lines out of a script with the same charisma. Like, it's like, it just, you know, there's just people out there that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just you don't have that thing. That you can't be an actor. You don't know how to play pretend. You just you're just you all the time. And then even when you are you all the time. And I mean, there's plenty of actors who are just them all the time, but they still know how to like run through the gamut of emotions.
I almost think that's kind of harder because like you know, no discredit to like the chameleons, like, you know, Gary Oldman.
Right.
But people seem to underplay the difficulty of having like a persona that can just be seen over and over again, because that's almost magic.
Yeah.
Like, Bill Murray is magic.
Yeah. Although they even get bored, though, sometimes, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I mean, with Gary Oldman, it's the opposite. Like, I think he's bored of the character thing, because he's just been Gary Oldman in the past, like, 10 movies he's done.
Yeah. And we're kind of bored of Johnny Depp.
Right, right. Yeah.
Where even that becomes a shtick, where you're like, oh, what do you, you know, what's your funny hat going to look like, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Which I've never been
at. His newest hat is a Canadian one.
Ah, yoga hosers.
Yeah.
What I'm really, here's the thing, I'm kind of into past my prime Johnny Depp, because like he was the king of the world for like a good, I want to say almost like the entire 2000s he kind of owned.
Yeah, like, I mean from Pirates on, right?
Yeah, from Pirates to Alice in Wonderland, you know.
Yeah,
he was king of the world. He was like he could have greenlit anything, and he did. And then like around. Even though Dead Man's Chest made like $1 billion, like that movie's not in the collective consciousness the mm-hmm. way that. And then you have like, did you see Transcendence?
No.
It was really bad.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go see it.
That might be the worst. It actually might be the worst movie I've seen in the theater this year.
Really worse than Turtles?
Yeah, because Turtles made me laugh and smile like 3 times.
Oh.
There was one time where like Michelangelo would be like, yo, what's up, man? And I'd be like, it's so stupid. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, it made me like, it's like, oh, this is dumb, but I was smiling.
Adrenaline. Hilarious.
That's not how you write a script. But I remember during, me and my old roommate Hunter went to go see Transcendence together, and we were walking out, and I was like, man, that was really bad. And he was like, I've never not thought about a movie more while watching it.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, I thought about my script. I thought about what I had to do in school tomorrow. I thought about calling my parents. I literally just went through my week.
Wow. That's when watching a movie is just a chore.
Yeah, when it might as well not be happening.
Yeah. It looked like a bland Lawnmower Man to me.
Yeah, and it had really big ideas. It just did it really vanilla. You know how Christopher Nolan's visual aesthetic is kind of vanilla.
Right.
Where it's kind of all muted. There's no blood. There's no, like, the editing is very soft. You can't really ever feel punches. It's not very visceral.
Right.
But there's such an elegance to it that you get swept up in the filmmaking.
Right.
Like, even his worst movies just have this big scale of, like, you feel like you're watching, like, the most expensive James Bond movie of all time.
Yeah, it just feels very practical in a way that feels like old Hollywood.
Yeah, he has such a workman-like spirit, mm-hmm. in a way, where he's like, and then this happens, and you can just feel the machine chugging along.
Right.
But it's such a well-made machine.
Right.
Like, even his sense of humor is just very, like, subtle and not showy. It's like, oh, this funny thing, don't you think?
Right.
I've noticed that in every Christopher Nolan movie, it's just like unexpected, unexpected obstacle, and then snide remark, and then other side remark.
Right.
That's like every Christopher Nolan joke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But Transcendence was like that without the like elegance.
Right. Right. And well, I mean, that's because that's what happens when you let a cameraman become a director. You kind of lose that, because it's not like it's not like his camera work is particularly it doesn't have like a spirit to it, doesn't have like a personality to it the way that like
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Right, Barry Sonnenfeld is a perfect example of a DP where you're just like, you know, you're watching Raising Arizona and you're like, who shot this? This guy should be directing movies. And then he did, and they look just like that.
Sure.
But Wally Fisher?
I think it's Pfister, actually.
Pfister, okay.
You don't want it to be that, but it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I kept wanting to say Finster, and I'm like, no, I think that's because I was thinking Adam's Family because of Sonnenfeld. So Wally Pfister, you know, he's not his camera work is not impressive. What's impressive is like the story behind it and, like, the use of that camera work by the director. Like, it's hard to explain that relationship, the DP director relationship. All I know is, I look at Transcendence and I'm like, well, that's sad. And I look at Nolan's first movie without Pfister and I go, something's missing. Doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right.
I'm actually really kind of into the look of Interstellar.
I'm not. I think it looks kind of ugly, I'll be honest.
Sure, like it's very grainy. It's very
It's rust probably, colored too.
It's probably, and I mean this me personally in a good way. It's the least pretty a spaceship has ever looked. Serenity. I just mean like everything's just kind of like muted.
Yeah.
Because everything's so white and pristine and like it's 2001 A Space Odyssey, but it's all muted.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's something about that trailer. It just doesn't... I always want to be really impressed by it. I'm just not. Every trailer that comes out.
Sure. Yeah. It's like you feel... You see what's happening and you're like, oh, he's going to leave his daughter forever and they're really sad. And like you get why that's supposed to be really moving, but it's not.
Yeah, it's just... I'm just not... I don't know. There's... Something missing. It feels like I don't know. It feels like chocolate chip cookies without the chocolate chips. I don't know. What's the point? I guess I don't know.
Yeah, cookies.
Yeah, cookies.
Or bread.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I don't know. It just I don't know. I mean, I'm still gonna go. You know.
Because it's Nolan.
Yeah, it's Nolan. So I'll definitely give it a shot, but I'm not... It's something that I'm going to see mostly because I feel like I have to, more than because I, need to, you know?
You don't want to be left out of the conversation.
Right, right. Exactly.
I mean, that's why I'm going to see The Third Hobbit.
Yeah, no, I don't need to be in that conversation.
Yeah.
I had enough with the first one.
I need to say goodbye to an old friend, even though he hasn't been what he used to be in these last few years. I need to be not even in the hospital room. I need to be outside of the room looking through the mirror and just kind of like nod once. No one even notices me.
That's funny. Well, congratulations though.
I'm really excited.
That's really awesome.
You know, senior year, all that, you kind of, you know, you put unnecessary emphasis on it, you know?
Sure, sure. But no, that's really exciting. When does the play go up and how long does it run for?
It runs for 2 weekends in November. I will actually turn 23 during the run of the show.
Mm, that's awesome.
And I will no longer be 20. Man, can I... 22 used to just be such a nothing age before that Taylor Swift song.
I mean, I don't... I vaguely know what you're talking about.
Okay. See, I go to a college, so that was just...
Yeah.
You know, every time someone turned 22, like, someone would quote that song or, like, post about it on, like, the social medias.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, they used to be such a nothing age.
I remember it being a nothing age.
Yeah, and now just because she wrote a song about me, and like, I don't know, I think that's such a funny phenomenon. Because she could just write one about being 23, and it would have the exact, it would be about the same kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well,
oh, man.
I don't think anyone argues that she's the best songwriter, so I think it's fine.
Man, I've been thinking about 23 a lot because, I got all my, I think I told you about this. I let all my Scott Pilgrim books out. Like I lent them out to a buddy like 2 years ago. And I was there visiting his child, Passage of Time. Like it's, and so we were just walking around and I just saw the books and I was like, oh man, I forgot I let you borrow all these. And he was like, oh yeah, take them. I never even read them. And I was like, well, fuck you. But, 2 years, you couldn't find time to...
Well, to be fair, he had a kid, so...
Sure, he was busy. He was busy.
I can't imagine finding out my girlfriend's pregnant and then being like, well, let's check out and see what this Scott Pilgrim thing's all about. I just can't imagine.
It's like, oh, I borrowed this, like, I borrowed the Quantum Leap from Matt. I should probably get to watching this. he'll want these back soon. But no, and then I took them all home, like, and I was looking through them and just hit with a blast of nostalgia that I wasn't really expecting. Because I read them all over like over the course of like a year, and so just this story just reminds me of a very specific time in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I was simultaneously waiting for the movie because remember Edgar Wright used to do those like picture a day things.
Yeah.
So I was just obsessed with Scott Pilgrim like my entire senior year of high school.
Mm.
I was flipping through them. And, you know, all the books start with, like, the first panel of Scott, and it says, like, Scott Pilgrim, 23 years old.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God. I'm going to be as old as Scott Pilgrim this year.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember reading, when I was 18 and I was reading, I'm like, 23, that's a random year, you know?
Right.
I can't wait till I'm these guys' age, because I'll be, like, cool and out of college and, like, living in a city, and you know, we'll just be all like, you know, making out and have like video game powers. That's what I actually thought being in your 20s was like so I was really hit with this kind of this brick wall of mortality where I'm like, I will for the rest of my life, I will only ever be older than Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, isn't that a weird feeling?
Yeah, except that he turns 24 in the middle of the series, so I'll be okay for a year.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is. Do you have any feelings like that where you're like, oh shit, I'm older than this person?
I mean, especially now because I'm gonna turn 30 soon.
Yeah.
So that's huge. I mean, the thing that's super weird about that is I remember vividly my mom turning 30.
Oh, like that's enough of a memory to be like, yeah.
Yeah, like when I was a kid, I vividly remember my mom turning 30 and me buying a card because I thought it was funny. It was like a joke card about turning 30 and being over the hill and all of this. And now I'm about to turn 30 and I look back and I'm just like, what a asshole. I'm such a piece of shit. Because I just picture like somebody doing that to me now and I'm just like, God damn it. But yeah, no, I vividly remember my mom turning 30, when I was a kid and,
Oh, man.
It's weird for me. Less so than like fictional stuff. Cause I'm already past all of that, you know, where, stuff like, oh, the characters on Buffy, like I'm older than them. Like
sure.
I'm older than them when the show ended. I'm older than them.
In the comics.
Where they currently are in the comics. So, like, that was probably the last big one, was when I realized I was older than everyone on that show. Mm-hmm. And now, like, the big ones are going to be, like, I vividly remember my mom turning 30, so that's going to be a big deal for me. And I vividly remember my dad turning 36.
Really?
I don't know why 36. But for some reason, 36 feels like an important age to me, and just me. Like, I don't think it's important to anyone else, but it's something to do with like being like I feel like at 36 you're officially not young anymore.
Sure, you're like an adult, like
a grown, like that's
you're
like,
a grown ass man.
Yeah, because you're closer to 40 than you are any other age, and and then it's just downhill from there. Mm-hmm. Those are the two big ones that I'm just like, oh man.
Maybe Taylor Swift wrote a song called 36. It's like, it feels like a perfect night to go to bed at 10 o'clock. It's aging's weird. You know, did you know Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate is 42?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that nuts?
That's insane.
Yeah.
I didn't even get that when I was watching it. I just, like, the first time I saw it, I was, like, in ninth grade or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, Mrs. Robinson is older. You know what I mean?
Right.
But 42?
Yeah.
Like, that's how old, like...
42 was, like, middle age back then, though. You know?
Yeah, that's really crazy. Like, I think there was, like, a big deal about Cameron Diaz was 42 in this magazine I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like, he's having sex with Cameron Diaz? That's a scandalous.
Yeah. So scandalous. Yeah, I don't know, the 42 thing. That's it's weird, but it's like, you know, they were getting married. You know, she came from, that character came from a generation that got married at like 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at 42, she'd already been married for like 15 years.
Yeah, like Benjamin was already behind coming out of college.
Right. Right. So.
That's a movie.
That movie's, that, what a weird, that's such a weird time for film.
That the, oh, are you not, yeah, are you not the biggest Graduate fan?
No, I love The Graduate.
Okay.
No, no, no. It's just, I was just thinking, it just reminds me of that late 60s phase of like The Graduate and Rosemary's Baby. Like, what a weird time period where like filmmakers are trying to do new things with film and mm-hmm. they're like, they're beginning to birth what becomes like New Hollywood, mm-hmm. like blockbusters and everything, and directors of photography becoming a big deal, you know?
It's like right before the Easy Rider, Raging Bull period.
Right. It's right before that. And you can feel it on the verge. It's like the water is starting to boil, mm-hmm. but it's not quite there yet. It's just such an interesting, it's just like Hollywood just beginning to shake off that old school 60s. Look. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Planet soundstage the look, you know?
Yeah, everything. Totally.
Yeah.
I just was really randomly reminded of that scene in Mad Men where Don takes Bobby to go see Planet of the Apes.
That's another one from that same time period.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah. There's this really sweet part where, oh man, it's weird that I'm remembering this, but like, you know, lights go up on the twist and Don kind of looks down. You can subtly see that Bobby's like mind is blown.
Yeah.
And he's like, so what do you think? And he's like, wow. And he's like, you want to watch it again? And he's like, yeah. And then they just kind of sit there and the lights go down. And yeah. I remember being like, oh yeah, Don can be kind of a good dad sometimes.
Yeah. 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 God. Oh yeah. I love that moment in that show.
That's a good it's such show. A weirdly sweet show.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But then it's interesting watching that show because, like, I mean, the thing is, like, yeah, like, those moments are really cool, but, like, the thing that everyone remembers is just, like, how outdated it is, you know, on purpose because it's, like, commenting on...
Yeah.
On politics and whatnot. But it's... I don't know. I just thought... I was just thinking about that, and, like, then it just sort of drives my brain to... what's going on with this whole like gamer thing, and I'm just like,
oh, that's so crazy. I was just about to make a dumb joke about that.
Oh my god.
Because I was like, yeah, an ancient time when racism and sexism is over. Not like August 2014, the worst month in human fucking history.
It's seriously, if it wasn't for Guardians of the Galaxy, like
it's almost like we needed it.
I know. It sucks like, that it came out at the beginning of the month, honestly.
It's like life was like, you're gonna want to go see this every weekend.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Shit's about to go down.
Fuck. You know, and it's so funny. I was thinking about this today. I sort of made myself laugh at work mm-hmm. today because I was thinking about all of this, and I was just like, ugh. Because like, I don't comment on a lot of it, and the only reason isn't because I don't like believe it with every fiber of my being, but. One, I feel like I don't it's so stupid. Like it's so stupid yeah. that I'm just like, why do I need to waste my breath coming up with a defense for women?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
why do I have to do that? Like I shouldn't have to. Like this shouldn't be happening. It's 2014.
It's like, it goes back to the Joss Whedon speech where I don't like the word feminism because it puts us on the not normal side of things. There should be a word for people who aren't feminist.
Right, right.
I think we brought that up on the show. Yeah.
But like, but what I was thinking about was the fact that it sort of like drove me to the place where there's those people out there who are afraid to say they're feminist because of what they think that feminism represents.
Sure, yeah.
Being like the pop culture version of feminist,
like the All in the Family version of feminism.
Right, right. Well, not even that, because even that's tame. Like they're talking about like the man haters club. Like that's what they think of.
Oh, feminist. Sorry. I was being vague. I mean, like the way a feminist would be in an episode of what show is Ed O'Neill in?
Married with Children?
That's what I meant. Like, the Married with Children version.
Yes, definitely. I was going to say, All in the Family. I don't know. So. But yeah, Married with Children, that perfect. That's a perfect example of like, what they think that feminism means.
And what they think men's rights activists are like.
Right. So I just look at I mean
what they think of themselves, like I'm defending men, I'm sticking up for the, but really they're just tools.
Yeah, they're just total douchebags. But no, I look at it and the irony of the whole gamer thing and like not all men and all of that. I look at it and I just, the irony of it is that I love video games. I love video games, right?
Yeah.
But if somebody says, "Are you a gamer?" I go, "No." No, I mean, I like video games, but I'm not a gamer.
Yeah, because we collectively, you and I, and people that are kind of in the geekier side of the internet, like, we know what gamer means.
Right, right. But that's the irony, is that, like, a gamer to us is the same thing that feminism is to them, and it made me laugh.
Where they're constantly, yeah, because if you follow, like, on Devin Faraci, doing God's work this week.
Yeah, but, he is. It's true.
Yeah, I don't. There's no way he's. There's no way he's even gonna know this is a thing we're doing. But like, you know, right. Little hats off to him.
Yeah, no joke. And his whole crew over at Badass. Like,
yeah,
it's nuts. It's nuts.
Including the commenters.
Yeah, including the commenters apparently, who are being like awesome.
Yeah, but anyway, but like, you know, you I like to, when I'm feeling kind of like shitty, you know, when you want to, you know, you just want to see something that's going to make you mad, you know?
Yeah.
I'll read like what people are tweeting at him and it's like, you know, oh, well, you know, you're just, why are you thinking that like anime, people like anime are all freaks, you know, like, or why do you think all bronies are freaks? And it's like, yeah, like just so almost sadly unaware of the irony of their statements.
Right. There's a, somebody I'm friends with on Facebook posted a thing about, what is the woman's name that is posted those YouTube videos that like take down women in games?
Zoe Quinn?
No, not Zoe Quinn. Zoe Quinn was the sex scandal thing. This is,
oh, okay.
This is the woman that they, this is the other conspiracy woman. It starts with an S. It's like Sakeith or Sack something.
Sexteen
something. Yeah, it's something. I can't remember what her name is.
But it sounds really foolish, but it's whatever.
Well, here's my point.
Okay.
All right. So the YouTube thing, she's been posting these YouTube videos that are like a half hour. They're like little half hour documentaries where she shows examples in games of women being mistreated for one reason or another, like either they're victims or they're like background, just dead bodies, like sexualized dead bodies. And like, mm-hmm. just like a lot of really shitty things that happen in games to women. And, between her and Zoe Quinn, and that whole scandal, that's where all of this gamer hate,
Sort of why this happened. This is why it's in the conversation at this moment.
Right. A friend of mine on Facebook posted a link to one of her videos, like her latest one, where she was specifically talking about women as like background, like dead bodies, and just like, you know, like how just as an example, like in Assassin's Creed, you'll like walk up to a gang and you'll be like, hey, like don't like let that woman go, and they'll be like, ha ha ha, and then they'll slit her throat, and then you have to fight them.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, but like, and then it's just all men. And then that one woman that got her throat slit and that was it, yeah. You know? And all she's saying is like, that's kind of fucked up, right? Like it's kind of fucked up. I mean, that's literally like all she's saying, right? But yeah. she's trying to sound very,
calm,
calm and academic. You know,
because if she doesn't, that's what.
No, like, but that's the thing is she sounds like that. Everyone is just like, yeah, she just sounds like your average feminazi and blah, 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 blah. And it's so funny. She's like, they were like, I can't even watch this video. And this is comments on, not on the article that posted the video or on the video.
Like
this
anonymous YouTube fucks.
No, this isn't YouTube fucks. This is commenters on my friend's Facebook post.
You see, like, their faces.
Yes.
Who they are, who they love.
Right. Where they're going. Right. Yeah, right. And they're just talking about her, like, and he literally, one of them goes, I can't take her seriously because I can't get over her face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just, the fuck does that mean? And my point to me not remembering her name, which is not at any point to her, me being disrespectful to her or what she's doing or anything like that. My point is that she doesn't matter. The point is that of what she's talking about. That's what matters.
It's the message.
And I think she would even agree. She doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who she is. What matters is what she's talking about. And it just boggled my mind that all they could do is talk about, like, how they were just like, oh, these are all the examples where she's contradicted herself in public. She claims to be a gamer, but she's not. And I'm like, it doesn't fucking matter. And then one of them was just like, oh, but, okay, so one woman dies, but I can just go kill, like, 25 guys in the same game and it's totally fine. Yes, it is totally fine. And then he's just like, isn't that sexist? No, it's not sexist, because in order for a thing to be sexist, you have to not be in control. Or at least, at the very least, on equal footing, but you're not. And that's the point. And I didn't even get in on the argument because I just was so...
what's the point? Yeah.
Right. There's no point because you can't convince them.
No.
You can't convince them. And that's the worst part. Like, that's just the worst part. It's like your conversation you were having with... I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but when you were talking to Adam Quigley about female-led comic book movies.
And he couldn't see the point of it.
No.
He thought that there had to be, like, well... It's like, well, they're not... Like, well, why do it? Like, it's just special to... No, it's... It's the why does it have to be a special thing?
Right. It shouldn't have to be a special thing, and that's the fucking point.
It's just be a thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And why isn't it? And it's like, but you're not. He was doing this because Devin Faraci was getting in a very sad argument with Adam Quigley. Sad in that it was, you could just see Devin Faraci just kind of not realizing that there was literally no point to what he was doing.
Right. Which happened again today, by the way.
Yeah, but it was just like he's like, well, you're not pleading your case. Like, I shouldn't have, there shouldn't be a case to plead. I don't have to, like, drive over to Washington D.C. like Leslie Knope with like a binder full of, like, resources and evidence as to why Carol Danvers should be in a movie. It should just be happening because humans.
It's a massive example of missing the point. Is Adam Quigley saying, like, Why wouldn't we want to just make the best movie? It's like, it's his thing. Like, his major argument, Adam Quigley's, is not that because he doesn't believe he's being sexist, and it's coming from a place of ignorance, not a place of, like, hate or anything like that. So let's put that aside. Like, he's sexist in the way that, like, the majority of men in the world are sexist, in that they're sexist and they have no idea that they're doing it. Right. It comes from a complete, like, just lack of realizing what's going on in the universe.
Or, like, realizing what the other side of things could be.
Right. And what his point is, like, that he's always trying to make is that we should just forget all this gender inequality and just start from an equal place and move our way outward. And so he's saying, like, oh, no, I'm above all of you. What I'm saying is we already are equal. And if everyone came up to my place, then we would all be in a good place. Like, everyone just come up to where I am on this cloud where everything is perfect, and then everything will be perfect because that's what I'm doing.
Because in my world, no one is ever oppressed.
Right. But the problem with that is that's not reality. It's not reality. And you know, regardless, here's the thing. Are female characters in Marvel movies, like, are really, really, are most female superheroes, other than, like, say, Wonder Woman or Batgirl or Supergirl, like, kind of like the big ones that DC happens to have, other than those ones, are a lot of the female characters weaker than the male counterparts? Yes.
Yes.
But That doesn't very much so, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be trying your goddamn hardest to undo that fucking disaster.
Yes, exactly, because he would be like, name one female superhero that deserves to be in a movie.
And any of them. No. Literally any of them.
Because you could do, if you canned, like, freaking J.J. Abrams, like, Squirrel Lady. If
maybe, there was maybe a super... not J.J. Abrams. That's probably a bad example.
I'm trying to name a talented filmmaker. If you hand...
Joss Whedon. Just go with Joss Whedon.
Okay, yeah, because that's...
It's a safer bet.
Because there's only one good filmmaker in the world, according to these freaking people. Joss Whedon. If Joss Whedon was handed the keys to Laptops for Hands Girl... Like, Laptops for Hands Girl, created in 1982 in, like, DC Comics. Probably not the richest backstory or, like, the most iconic imagery or rogues gallery.
Right.
But I'm just saying you could hand that character to Joss Whedon and you could make a really awesome, like, office comedy about Laptops for Hands Girl.
Right. I mean, it's like, look at the next X-Men movie, right? The next X-Men movie, what we know about it already, the Apocalypse movie, is that it takes place in the 80s, and it's the original class of X-Men. Like, the ones that we met in the very, very first X-Men movie, it's them as teenagers. So it's them first joining the team. So it's Cyclops, it's Jean Grey, and it's Storm. Like, and Nightcrawler, I think.
Okay,
I think that's... Because now we're in an alternate universe, and they can meet him earlier.
And it's amazing.
Right. And Nightcrawler's amazing. But, okay, so you look at that, right? And you're going to have... Let's just take Nightcrawler out of the equation. And let's just look at that trinity. What is the trinity of the X-Men universe that I would consider? Because Wolverine is his own thing, kind of. I don't think he really... He's always the lead of the X-Men movies, but I think that's just by default.
Sure.
I think the trinity is really, in the X-Men movies, is Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Storm. And which is awesome, by the way, because that's 2/3 women, which is, that's pretty badass, right?
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah. So if you look at those three characters, right? Now, look, I'm a massive Cyclops fan. I love Cyclops. And I don't think we've ever seen Cyclops executed well in the movies.
No.
Right? Because he has a few moments in the first movie, but mostly he's a dick.
Yeah.
In the second movie, he disappears after 20 minutes and then comes back evil and then comes back and does nothing. And then he gets killed off within 20 minutes of the third movie.
Just personally, as a writer, Bryan Singer could give a shit about Scott Summers.
Right. He's just there because he feels like he needs to be as a part of X-Men iconography.
Hmm.
So I love Cyclops, and I would love nothing more than to see an awesome example of Cyclops. But you know what? I don't want to see it in the next movie. As much as I love Cyclops and I would love to see an awesome Cyclops, what's more important is giving the world an awesome badass Jean Grey and Storm.
Absolutely, yeah.
That should be the focus. Like, Storm should be a badass, like, mohawk-wearing
yes,
punk rock girl from, like, Brooklyn or something. Like, let's just drop the whole Africa thing. Because
like freaking Antonia Thomas. Like,
yeah, just awesome. And then Jean Grey should just be, like, the Spider-Man of like, female characters. Like...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, she should be just awesome, you know? Like, the whole great power, you know, great responsibility, only with Jean Grey. Like, that's totally what that should be.
Because she's, like, the most powerful mutant ever.
Right,
like,
right. And just relegate Cyclops and Nightcrawler to whatever, story points. I don't care. Because you know what? At the end of the day, that's not what the world needs. The world doesn't need more good male characters. They just don't.
Yeah, it's, like, we... have to acknowledge that, like, these stories, the fiction, especially now with, like, fandom being so passionate as they are, like Tumblr and whatnot and Twitter, these stories affect the pop culture and they affect the mood and, like, they affect the young people watching them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's like, and it's the thing, it's like you go back to their arguments. These, what is this group called? What do they call themselves?
Like, men rights activists?
Yeah, men's rights activists, MRA. The MRA is like what they think that feminists want is that like let's just get rid of male characters entirely. Let's have every movie be a female lead, and let's only care about the female characters. But no, that's not what they want. They just want some of them to do that. But the problem is that none of them are doing it because you keep fighting against it. Just let it happen. Let there be 2 or 3 years where it is heavily on the female side. Who gives a shit? Because then on the other side of that, we'll be like a little more equal. You know? Like, just a little more equal, if not completely equal. But like, this is it's obnoxious. Like, it's the reason why I try and write predominantly female-led stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's just what I just feel passionate about giving them more stuff.
Yeah, like, and then it's like, well, then why? When it's like, well, then aren't you being sexist? Why not? Why can't this character be male? It's because like, it doesn't matter. It means more if it's female,
right? Because it means more that it's female. That's it. And that's not being sexist because men are in control. Sorry. You know, like, it's so frustrating.
And yeah, and like I think the only way I can relate to the MRA, fuck me for even saying that. I'm not gonna those people. I don't want to use their word.
like, well, their phrasing is just so fucking dumb that
for sure.
I can't help but like use it almost ironically because you're just you idiots.
I'm a men's rights activist. What but a yeah,
bunch
like
of fucking morons.
But yeah, like the only way I can relate to those kinds of people, like. You know, because, like, okay, well, why would I think something like this? You know what I mean? Is sometimes you want to believe that the world doesn't have a problem because it means that you might have to change. So you want to fight for your perception of reality that everything's fine the way it is.
Right.
And everyone who thinks that that something should be different is like a radical with an agenda and blah, blah, blah. Because maybe you want to believe that the way things are happening right now is fine because it means that you're fine.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what it is. They're uncomfortable with the idea that they would have to change.
Like, they're uncomfortable with the idea that, like, their comic books and their movies and, like, their stuff they really care about might be faulty.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, okay. And somebody had to explain this to me on a podcast that I listened to. I'll completely fess up to me being an idiot when it came to this, right?
Sure, yeah.
I love Spider-Man, right? Mm. And Spider-Man is a character that I really feel personally connected to. And I feel a sense of, like, intense fandom ownership over, right? Mm-hmm. I got furious when he was killed off and replaced with Dr. Octopus in the comics. Like, I thought that was the dumbest thing. Granted, sure. I didn't like send death threats to Dan Slott. I sure. just kind of rolled. What was just like, well, that sucks and that's stupid. And I bitched about it in my own time. I didn't attack the poor guy
on a podcast like a man.
Yeah. but on that same podcast, like 9 months later, when he came back, and I literally was just like, okay, turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, totally to your credit. You were like, wow, that turned into a good story.
Yeah, turned into a great fucking story. And it was all about Peter Parker the whole time, and you had no idea. It's fucking awesome. Yeah. Anyway, but my point is I have a very, very deep connection with that character. And when they canceled Spectacular Spider-Man, which was a cartoon that I loved. It was an animated series. It was from Greg Wiseman, the Gargoyles writer, and the writer of he after Spectacular Spider-Man, he went on and did that Young Justice cartoon, which was also great. But I loved Spectacular Spider-Man. It was like everything I could possibly want in a Spider-Man cartoon. And then they canceled it after 2 seasons, and then started up that Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, okay, that's fine. I love Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, Bendis. Like, that's great. And then you watch it, and it's like, oh, no, this is just a toy commercial, and it's, like, kind of anime-influenced, and it's just, it's fucking weird.
It's Spider-Man by way of Teen Titans.
Right, right. And I hated it, right? And I was just like, what the fuck? This isn't Spider-Man. This is bullshit. Fuck this. This is dumb. And I was mad about it. Like, I was really mad that they took away my Spider-Man. And it took a podcast. It took iFanboy, actually. Like, they got an email and they were talking. One of their emails was talking about this sort of phenomenon about, you know, have you ever really loved a character and then hated an interpretation of it? And the way they looked at it, you know, they're like 5 to 10 years older than me, all of them. And the way they looked at it, they were like, yes, that happens all the time, but you need to get over it, because once you're over 18, it's not about you anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And so now I look at that Ultimate Spider-Man show, and they're like, yeah, that Ultimate Spider-Man show, it's not for you. You're not the target audience. They are not making that for you. They're making it for kids who like things that you don't understand, and that's okay because now they have a Spider-Man.
They have a visual reference, a visual reference palette that you literally will never comprehend.
Right. And then I was just like, oh. And it was, and it's the weirdest thing is like that is related to this, because it's just like you think that this is always about you because you're always in your own head.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to get out of your own head and your own perspective. Yeah, that's hard for anyone.
Yeah, and it must be even harder for the kinds of people that live or die based on like Twitter.
Right.
Like people that have to get like in fights and arguments and like harass people while on their laptop and their phone.
Right.
You know, because it's easy to forget that these are people too, and not like in a feel bad for them kind of way, but like in a like, wow, like when I was, you know, like during the Twitter thingy with Adam Quigley,
mm-hmm.
I was like kind of like drinking beer and like laughing and listening to music with my friends and coming back to my phone every like couple of hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, thinking about it now, it's like, well, like what was he doing? You know?
Right.
Who knows what, and I'm not going to speak personally about him, but who knows what all these random kind of gross people that are like tweeting and harassing other people, they're probably not engaging with the world. They're probably not talking to other people and trying to understand them on a human level.
Right.
They're just in their own world and they're on their chat rooms and they're absorbing their media for their own sake. And yeah, it's like people that don't understand people can get, I imagine that can be kind of like a frustrating place to be sometimes.
Right. Well, and it's, and the idea, you know, that I came to about it is just like, you know, yeah, you are used to the world one way. I'm used to Spider-Man being one way.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that my way is past now. Like, you don't get to have it your way all the time. You just don't. And it's time to relinquish control, MRA. Like, it's time to relinquish control. Because it's not just your world.
And it's happening. It's going to happen.
I'm like, God damn it, I hope so. I mean, it's a thing where it's like, you know, and this is, again, this is stupid, and it feels like, because like one of those problems that a lot of activists have for underdog type of people, you know, like women, you know, women, gay people,
minorities,
whatever. All of them, they have that thing where it's like, oh, you're going to save us. You're our savior. But like at the end of the day, it's like at least, I mean, I'm just a white male. Right. And like I should not have the right to get to a career in the entertainment business over any of them. But if I can use this like stupid privilege that I have to get there in a place where I can start hiring anyone I want and I can hire anyone but white dudes, like, is it, like, I don't know, like,
or I'm, maybe or maybe just like hire anybody but people who don't get why it's important to do that.
Yeah,
because, you know, I mean, like Joss Whedon, white male,
right, but he even gets shit on sometimes, you know.
Sure, totally. Yeah, and that will always be there, because like, well, who are you, you know?
Right.
But like, and that's when it gets kind of murky for me, because like, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, like if we were handed, you know, we fantasize about it, we daydream about it. If we were handed the keys to Captain Marvel,
right?
You know, like if someone said, Scott Carelli, we really loved your treatment for Captain Marvel. Hi, I'm Kevin Feige. I'm on my hover chair. Here you go. Like, here's your Captain Marvel movie. You know, assemble your team, Mr. Cobb.
Right.
You know,
the very first thing I would do is say, I'll write it, but I'm not going to direct it. Get a female. Okay. Get a woman.
So, okay, that was my next question. Like, what would you do?
Yeah, that'd be the first thing I would do is, like, I'm not directing this. You are getting a woman.
Yeah, wow.
That would be the very first thing, is I would relinquish control of the director's chair, first and foremost.
To, like, Michelle McLaurin.
Yeah.
Or like, some hot shit, like, girl that directed something really cool on YouTube that you saw.
Yeah, just, or, you know, something. I don't know. I don't know who I would go to, necessarily, because I love Michelle McLaurin, but I don't know if she would be necessarily the right choice for that.
For, like, a space opera, yeah.
Yeah, well, and for like, a space opera with, like a sense of humor.
Sure, definitely.
Whereas, like, her stuff tends to be very, very dramatic. That's why definitely. I think that she needs to be get Wonder Woman.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, this whole thing is just so frustrating.
But for me, like, I don't know if I could let anybody else direct Queen Witch, like, regardless of gender.
Well, but
or race,
that's different. You know? That's you. That's yours.
Oh, okay. That's, like, my dude.
Yeah.
That's, like, my lady.
Right. I wouldn't be able to relinquish control of any of the things that I wrote either. Like, sure, that are just ours, you know, that are just ours or mine or whatever. Like, I would want to have every part of it. But if it's a thing where it's like they're giving me the keys to something,
mm-hmm.
I'll write it and give it to someone else to direct.
So, like, if someone was like, Scott Carelli, we want you to, like, write a reboot to, like, Josie and the Pussycats and direct it, you'd be like, I'll write it, but I'm not going to direct it.
Yeah, I think so.
Give it to, like, oh, wow, this is fun now. Like, who would direct, like, a really cool Josie and the Pussycats reboot?
I don't know, and that's a real fucking problem. That there aren't enough
female directors
that I can just be like, them.
Oh, that happened to me the other day, because, like, they were like, well, who would... Well, when Kanam Quigley was like, well, female directors, you know, they should just earn it like everyone else. Like, you can't think of any female directors, can you? It's like, no, I can't. That's the fucking problem.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. That's a huge problem. Like, that's... And you know what's super weird is that apparently, from what I understand, like, there are lots of female producers that work, like producers and studio heads. There's lots of women that run studios and produce, Kevin Feige style. But apparently they're super sexist. like they don't hire women.
Sure. Like the I'm trying to name the character from Entourage, but, you know, like the studio head.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, man. It'll
happen. I mean, we have, like, the highest grossing movie in Disney history is directed by a woman.
Yeah.
Nope. Can't think of her name. I think it's Jennifer Lee.
Yeah, I think it is. Did she direct that, or did she just write it?
I think she... she might have just wrote it. Oh, but the highest grossing for a while, Kung Fu Panda 2 was directed by a woman. I think that's the highest grossing movie ever directed by a woman.
Okay.
Jennifer Yeo.
Fair enough.
But then again, like, what's, like, Hank, give Jennifer Yeo a live action movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you can give it to
Brad Bird.
Although that, of course, that's us working under the assumption that she would want to work in live action.
Sure. Who knows? Maybe she just loves the art of animation. Maybe it's the only way to make movies for her.
Right. So, I don't know. It's just, it's a real fucking problem, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, and it just, it's so frustrating to keep seeing The Rock not budging.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock of sexism. Like, you know, the Adam Quigley Rock, where you're just like, why won't you understand why you're full of shit? And then it's like, oh, whoa, maybe you can't. And then maybe you just got to go around The Rock and just leave The Rock where it is in the mud, not moving, you know?
Right. You but know, so and, many... it's, and it's so funny, and this was another thing that I found out, because, like, one of the things that Devin Faraci is doing, where he's just internet bullying the MRA, is he's finding pictures of them, he's, like, stalking them, and then finding pictures of them, and then just posting pictures of them.
I know that's so problematic to endorse, but it's just so funny, and that's not good, but it is.
No, but it is good, because he's doing to them what they're doing to these people. Like, he's trying to make them understand how it feels. And of course, it's not working because they don't think that way. Because
they're just like, well, you're no better than that, so therefore my actions are vindicated.
Yeah, right. So ultimately, it is a problem, but it is still kind of funny. But it's so funny looking at all of their pictures, because you start, like, and I you know, I work at a comic book store. Like, I see people like this. I see guys like this. And they do all kind of look the same. And you know how you can tell if a man has no respect for a woman?
If he has no respect for himself.
And no, it's the way they dress.
Sorry.
It's the way they dress.
Yeah,
if
sure,
they
totally.
Dress like slobs, it's not because they don't care. It's because they don't care about women. Like, that's why you get dressed up. Like, you dress up. really.
No, I know. I totally agree with you.
It's because you dress nice because you want to look, you want to be like, you know.
Visibly
appealing for, like, the opposite sex or for your girlfriend. Like, I've had a girlfriend, like we were just talking about. I've had a girlfriend for 4 years. Like, we've been together for very nearly 4 years. And I dress nice when I'm with her. And if I don't, like, I feel like shit. So I just do it all the time. Like, I just dress nice. And that's because I respect her and I want to not look like a slob when I'm out with her because I respect her.
Yeah, and you want, you know, you kind of want, even if she doesn't verbalize it, you like to imagine that she's like, oh, Scott looks really nice today. Oh, look at Scott. He has, like, look, he takes care of himself. That's so, like, cute or charming or, like, nice.
Right. And, well, and ultimately, like, I don't even feel like it's about me. Like, it's really just
about her.
Yeah,
you just want her to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's so funny that when you look at the guys who mistreat their girlfriends or mistreat women or treat them like shit, they have nasty ponytails or long hair that's disgusting and unwashed, and they wear sweatpants out in reality, and
like
wear like a whatever dirty shirt they found, and they're just like, fuck you, you're not going to change me. That's because you have no respect for women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Pinkie Pie shirt.
Right.
No.
I don't know.
Oh, God, you're in the heat of it, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm really pissed off about it. Like, it's just...
No. I mean, like, physically. Like, working at the comic book store. I always forget that.
Oh, yeah. It's bad. It's real bad. It's gotten to the point where I've now done this thing where I... And it, sometimes it gets me in trouble because... for a variety of reasons, which I'll go into in a second. But I've done this thing now where I go out of my way. If a guy and a girl, like if a guy and a girl walk into the store together, a man or a woman, whatever, they come in, I always talk to the woman first. Like I make it my assumption that she's the one who wanted to come in here.
Sure.
And then
even if you're wrong, it's like
right.
It's
right. And so I always talk to her first, and then she's like, if she's just like, oh, I'm just in here for him, you know. And then most of the time the guy is just like, oh yeah, I'm looking for this, blah blah blah. Every once in a while you'll get the guy that has that kind of look on their face where they're like, why are you talking to my girlfriend or my wife or whatever?
or my daughter, what are you doing?
And those ones are usually pretty, and those ones are usually like I described. the ones that do not take care of themselves,
sure.
Because they have no respect for women. Yeah, so like it's super problematic. I don't know. And I just, you know, I try, which I guess is the most
enough,
I can do. I don't know.
Or not enough, but just it's the most it's the most we can do is just try to do our part on our end.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it's a drop in a lake. But it's our. But I genuinely don't believe it is a drop in the lake. I believe that it's the opposite. I believe that we're the lake, and that every once in a while there's just these rancid 4chan motherfucker drops that like just, you know.
You know, another thing I thought of is that, and this is just such a small thing, but I was thinking about this because I've just recently got hired as a contributor to this new comic book website called Panels.
Oh, congratulations! I don't know if we've talked about that on the podcast yet.
I don't think we have, but thank you. And I wrote my first article for it. And I've been thinking about what I want to do next, and one of the things that I've thought about doing is an article about how I truly believe that women are better fans than men are. And by better fans, I just mean like they're more loyal. And the argument that I have is that, you know what I hear working in a comic book store more than anything? A guy comes in who's obviously never been there before. He's like, oh, I used to read comics when I was a kid. And then I discovered girls and I stopped. You know who I never hear say that? Women.
Yeah, damn. Wow, I've never thought about that before.
Women if they're fans of something, they're loyal and they stick with it. Always. Yeah. They're better fans than men are. Men will do, like, if just anything comes up, they'll stop.
Just like, oh, fuck you, Goku.
Yeah, right. Yeah. 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 And I mean, you know, there's the same way with their friends, you know, like how many stories do you hear about men who get a girlfriend and then they stop hanging out with their buds?
Yeah, we never see, like, it happened to Simba.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, you know, that doesn't really happen with women. In fact, there's like most of the time misogynist guys are constantly bitching about how their
she's like, no, I don't want to be
hanging out with their friends.
I don't want to be with you right now. I want to be with my friends.
Yeah.
With my...
And you're like, oh, I'm just going to be at home, my fucking sweatpants. Yeah, you are, you piece of shit.
Fuck you.
Oh, man. It's just so weird. Like, you just look at everything, and it's just, I don't know. I've been having, like, this whole gamer thing is just really just giving me this crazy epiphany where I'm just like, man, things are fucked.
Yeah. Like, I don't know when. Maybe it was when George Lucas changed Luke Skywalker to a boy. But I don't know. Something.
Oh, man.
I thought about that the other day. I was looking through, like, you know, God bless Peter Mayhew. He has all these, like, amazing tweets.
Right.
And, like, there was one about, like, concept art. And it was like, oh, this was back when Anakin Skywalker was a girl. And there was concept art. And sure enough, it was the exact same character. It kind of looked like Jodie Foster. It was just, like, a concept of Luke Skywalker. But he looked, like, maybe, like, a little bit more feminine in, like, the concept drawing.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, wait, the character is not different at all.
Well,
wow, what would have happened if it was Leia Skywalker?
I don't know.
And then Prince Luke was, you know, like, captured by Darth Vader. You know, nothing changes.
Right. Well, I actually, if I remember correctly, when it was, when Luke was a girl, I don't think there was a prince or a princess.
Oh,
in the story at all. Like, there was no one to go save.
She was just already like, let's go, let's do this.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it was like back in the day, like in that original draft where there was like
the Star Wars, where it was,
yeah,
everything.
Where it was the Star Wars and like
Luke Starkiller
lizard and yeah. There was no Han Solo and like it was like Starkiller and
yeah.
General Skywalker and all. It was like a totally different thing.
Yeah, I think. Totally different. So it was never like. She was, like, head of the Rebel Empire. It's like, who gonna bring that blood and pain? Like, it was, like, a totally different story.
Right. But, okay. Thankfully, I think that's what's happening with the new one, is we get a female lead.
Played by Daisy Ridley.
Yeah. I mean, assuming that she's the female lead. Really hope so.
Sure. Yeah, I really... She is so charming on Twitter.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, you're on Twitter? Boop, follow. And
she blocked Devin Faraci. Like, preemptively, awesome. He didn't even do anything to her. He's just like, I don't want any of that.
I like to imagine that, like, J.J. Abrams was like, oh, who's this? Oh, you can just go ahead and block that.
Yeah.
Why? He's a dick who doesn't know good cinema when it's staring at right, him in the
because he hates J.J. Abrams. Oh, my God. And then he wrote that article, which shocked me, where he's like, I'm feeling really positive about Star Wars. I was like,
yeah,
what? Do you know who's directing it? Because you hate that guy.
Oh,
it was
man.
A great article, too. I was like, I'm really impressed by you. That's what actually made me stick with him. Because, you know, as you know, I've attempted following him like 3 times.
Sure.
And I always get scared off. I'm at the verge of dropping Max Landis now because Max Landis is tweeting some heinous shit lately.
I haven't actually been keeping up with that.
Yeah, like last night he tweeted, women will say that they hate getting dick pics, but in reality they love to hate them, which is a form of love. And I was like, what the fuck, dude?
Again, I can't tell if... It's kind of like Brian. No, never mind. You know how Brian Lee O'Malley is so crazy, you just don't take anything he says seriously?
Right.
Unless there's like a link to something he's selling or making.
Right, but he
like,
does it at a level that is so ridiculous that you know that it's
yeah.
He's being just insane, you know?
Where it's like, does spaghetti make you fat? Hashtag blessed. And you're like, cool.
Yeah, you're like, all right, thank you. You just want to kind of like pet his Twitter avatar and just be like, cool. That'll do, O'Malley.
That'll do, Radio Mario, that'll do. But then Max Landis, this is right at that level where you're like, this is kind of satirical, but
And I not. Think he gets off on us being confused.
Sure, totally.
Which makes it I don't know.
Kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Because you don't, because like as someone, you don't like feeling, I don't like that. You know those dudes at parties or maybe in your social life that think that they're like the Jeff Winger of their reality?
Yes.
Where you're like, I'm going to be a charm. I actually had this talk with a friend.
He thinks he's the Jeff Winger, but he's actually Abed.
Yeah. Much like Dan Harmon, autobiographically.
Yeah. Weird.
But yeah, but no, it's like, I'm being a dick. And it's like, you know, people in the story don't like the dick. It's the audience that's like, oh, isn't he charming? No one in Jeff Winger's life likes Jeff Winger at the start of Community.
Right. Nobody really, they still kind of don't like him most of the time. They like him at the beginning and the end of every episode. But
they like him by the finale.
Yeah, but in the middle of every episode, they hate the guy.
Yo, you're such a dick. Yeah. Or like everyone thinks Ryan Reynolds in every Ryan Reynolds movie is a dick.
Yeah.
Nobody likes him. Even when he's Deadpool. Nobody likes Deadpool.
Right.
The readers like Deadpool. If you had a gun with three bullets, Victor Von Doom, Wade Wilson, and Venom, you would shoot Wade Wilson three times.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't work.
Well, yeah, and then it wouldn't work because he has the healing factor.
Sure.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Is this our longest episode?
I think it is. We had a lot to talk about.
Yeah, this is a very personal, impassioned episode.
I'm so full of rage. It's just, and it's not even like a real kind of rage. It's just a frustrated rage where I'm just like, wake the fuck up, everybody.
Yeah. And I don't take any. Maybe that's why it's like kind of laughy rage, because I don't actually take any of them seriously.
Right.
It just sucks that there's so many of them, and they're so loud, and they're so mean.
They are so mean. Like, they're just vile.
You know who's not mean? Adam Sessler. Like, just, you know what I mean? It's like the people that are on the side of equal human rights and feminism just tend to be nicer.
Yeah.
And it's like, is that not registering for you guys? Like,
no, it's not, because they're vile, disgusting human beings.
Nah.
I mean, that's the ultimate problem. And they think they're right. They're afraid. That's where all of this comes from. Is they're afraid of losing the only thing they have, which is that they're white men.
Yeah, and like they're maybe afraid of women. Maybe they're afraid of minorities, and not like in the easy like way, but you know what I mean? Like maybe on like a deep subconscious level.
Yeah. They don't want to relinquish control of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cause then they,
I couldn't care. I couldn't give less of a shit.
Yeah.
I don't want to control the world. Let somebody else do it.
Sure. Like Hillary Clinton. Let's get to writing.